Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
Welcome. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meets here at WCAP 980 on your dial. Glad you could join us tonight. We are here tonight and every night between the hour of 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Well, tonight, my fellow truth seekers, we go beneath the surface on the topic of the contraceptive legacy. Now, we'll tell you what we mean by that as we unfold the show, but to be honest with you, between you and I don't know if there's a more important topic to cover in modern times. This topic, which I believe is most important, I kind of place in the category of things that people are unable to or not ready to hear, and yet I don't know if there's anything more important. That said, this is what I wrote on the internet advertising for tonight's show. Quote, in the past 50 years, we have averted our greatest fear, the nuclear bomb, only to drop a much more devastating one on ourselves, the contraception bomb. Near the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, we uncover the modern world's greatest revolution against God. Unquote. There you have my opening take on it. We're going to unpack this, and I know a lot of people are probably saying, what in the world is he talking about? Hopefully, by the end of the show, you will at least understand what I'm talking about. Whether you begin to agree or not is, of course, up to you. Our BTS radio hotline, as usual, is 978-454-4980. That is 978-454-4980. Or you can simply jot your thoughts down at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Well, there you go.
Howdy.
There you go. Are you on?
I feel like I'm on.
Ah, and I hear you.
Oh, excellent.
Which is always, always a good sign. So, are you my guest tonight?
I am totally your guest.
Blessed am I.
Yes, and I am a nameless guest.
Yeah. Oh, you were given a name at birth?
I was.
Wow. That's funny.
Most, middle and a last.
It seems like virtually all of us have been.
I think so.
Yeah,
except
that's what I said.
That little kid who was raised by wolves.
Yeah, that's what I say to my students when I'm giving them an exam or something. I said, please don't forget your name to write your name on the top of the exam if you have one. If not, I will assign you one. And it's funny how everybody usually has one. Cindy Lou is looking at us as if there's something wrong, so I wonder if there is something wrong. Is there a technical problem?
I can barely hear him.
Oh.
Who can you barely hear?
Can you hear me?
Let us know if you can hear us both.
I'm going to try the middle mic.
Wow, that certainly seems a lot better.
You know, I think I'm going to stay on the middle mic.
Okay. We just got the thumbs up by Cindy behind the glass.
Your light and easy favorites.
Yeah, by the way, her nickname is not Cindy behind the glass because she doesn't like that. So we got it from Cindy, comma, behind the glass. That's very different.
Yes.
Than saying Cindy behind the glass.
Yes.
You got that?
Because the comma is a pause.
The comma is a pause, telling us all that this is not part of her nickname.
Naturally.
Right, Cindy? Yeah?
Nice.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. All right. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface. If you want to get beneath the surface with us. And by the way, Cindy, is there something wrong with the internet tonight? Do you have any idea? At least here in the...
The internet's not really working.
Okay, that's here in the studio, right?
Yep.
Okay, hopefully the podcast
I was concerned because I thought the actual internet was broken.
Throughout the whole world?
Throughout the whole world.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah, that'd be a real feat.
All right, John, since they might not have heard all of you last time, how are you doing?
I am well. I am
good.
Well.
Good. That's it?
Yeah.
Define well for me in one sentence.
Working, breathing, and existing.
So you still eat, sleep, and breathe?
I certainly do.
That's cool.
Yes.
That's cool. That makes you an animal. Do you think and freely choose?
Yes.
Wow.
And therefore, I would be a rational animal.
That makes you a rational animal, or what Aristotle would call a human being, as a rational animal. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I will vouch for that, looking at you right now. I will vouch for that.
Like a wild man animal? Or
You're pretty tame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. So, John Tesaurus, we have a serious topic here.
Yes, we do.
As a matter of fact, this was your idea. Just want to tell the audience that you came up with this idea, and I said, sure, let's do it.
Well, I think I got the impression from your feedback that it was already on your mind anyway.
Well,
to some degree.
Like I told my audience, this topic is always on my mind. Whether or not to, who to tell what is on my mind about this topic, and when to do it, and how to do it, whether to have a radio show about it or not, those are prudential questions. So, you made me believe that this was prudent tonight.
Oh, well, good. Sometimes getting confirmation is good as far as going ahead. I did have one thought in your opening little monologue as far as the importance of this and how some people may be reacting, saying, what? Like, why is this such an important topic?
Yeah.
Because really it's not on a lot of people's minds, I don't think, at least certainly not on the surface. And I think one reason why is because there have been multiple generations of this being embedded into the fabric of what people almost expect, meaning that it's in the atmosphere.
Yeah, so in other words, it is on a lot of people's minds, but in a way that it is a second nature kind of practice in their lives.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not being morally questioned by a whole lot of people.
In fact, so much so in line with that it's actually often thought by many people to be a good.
Yes.
In so much as they say, well, if you're going to be responsible, then you will, use a condom, use protection.
Yes, and let's continue with this devil's advocate to show what the world thinks today. Not only is it a good because of those reasons, but it is seen or perceived as a good because it liberates women to have the 1.4 children that they want and to be career oriented and do everything else that their heart desires them to want to do.
On the surface.
Yeah, so this is what has been sold to American, European, basically the world today, that the contraceptive pill, which was invented in 1960, and we can get into that a little later, was supposed to be the panacea to bring about true equality between males and females and enable women to really take charge of their own lives.
That's what what you would say is there on the surface, but beneath it, that's really not the case
and
at all.
That's where we're going tonight, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Okay. If you want to delve beneath the surface on this topic, 978-454-4980 is our BTS hotline, 978-454-4980. All right. I want to talk about two very basic questions with you, John, throughout this hour. The first is, why is this immoral? And the second is, let's look at the consequences of this, of the contraceptive worlds. I was going to say the contraceptive mentality, and that, of course, is part of the contraceptive world that we live in today.
Yeah, definitely in the Western civilization, and one could actually argue that that is has been creeping steadily into even third-world countries, too.
And one reason it is because we are forcing it into third-world countries.
Oh, sure.
And as a matter of fact, we, in some of the presidential administrations, not to mention this present one, which is about to end, a lot of the aid that we give to other countries is incumbent upon them accepting our mentality regarding contraception and abortion.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's actually one of the main conditions is you can have our aid so long as you spread certain contraceptive practices.
Exactly. Moral imperialism, some of the countries call the United States because of this. This practice. All right. So, first question. Why is contraception, and by that we mean barrier methods as well as pill and pharmaceutical methods, why is contraception immoral? And there are two ways we want to take this. One, first, through simple human reason, which means that everybody can figure this out by using their minds. And the second, after that, we'll talk about the faith part of this.
Sure.
All right, so let's go through human reason. Why is contraception immoral? Or why? Let's say, why is it unnatural?
It's because it's contrary to nature. Now, some people might say, well, that's being roundabout. I mean, you said, why is it unnatural? And I'm saying it's contrary to nature. Mm-hmm. Isn't that really saying the same thing? Yes, but then it leads us forward.
Well, let's talk about that. What do you mean by nature? Human nature, I assume.
Well, that's right. Everything has purpose, has an end, right? I mean, you and I off the radio have had conversations on this in the past, and that is why. Well, thank you for the water.
You're welcome. Yeah, that is what.
That is good water. So everything has purpose, right? So, for example, this water you gave me, the purpose of it being here in this bottle so that I can make. Drink it, be nourished, refreshed, and everything has real purpose. When it comes to the sex act itself, it has one primary purpose and only one primary purpose, and that is procreation.
Does it have secondary purposes?
It does have secondary purpose. Okay. And actually, when it comes to humans, you would actually say that the secondary purpose is intimately wedded to the first primary purpose.
And that what is that secondary
purpose? So that the secondary purpose is unity between spouses.
All right. So union and procreation.
Yes.
Okay. And the, my understanding of what you said right then is what basically what St. Thomas Aquinas taught, that the primary end of the sex act, whether it be animals or humans, because, you know, we all procreate because it is Mother Nature's way and or God's way of telling us that life is a good thing, to continue it, right?
Yes.
So, like, food is to the survival of the individual, sex is to the survival of the species. All right, so, that is the primary purpose.
And not just survival of species, I would even extend that further by saying that life by its nature is fruitful and is not barren or sterile. Hmm. So life is fruitful, meaning that its nature is not to be contained within itself.
Right.
It is forthgiving. It proceeds outward.
The very nature of life.
Yes.
Okay. So that we have that in common with all the animals of the world, that the procreative act has a natural end or purpose to it, and that is to continue the species or the race, the human race.
Yes.
Now, there is another end which one could see as intrinsically linked, as almost cause and effect, and that is what you mentioned as the secondary end or the unitive aspect.
Yes.
In Humanae Vitae, I shouldn't even gone to this yet because we're going to talk about faith in a few minutes.
Well, this is actually part of natural. He was referencing natural law.
He is speaking about natural law here, that the unitive and the procreative meanings or significations of the marital act or the sexual act cannot be separated.
No, they can't.
It's sort of like heads and tails of a coin. If you separate it, you get neither life nor love. It's not substantial anymore.
That's correct.
So tell me about the unitive meaning.
Well, that actually goes to the idea that marriage itself is actually part of natural law.
Yeah.
So marriage, which we find in all cultures and in all times, recorded times, is basically one man and one woman coming together for the purpose of bringing forth children, but also for having that bond. So the family is like a little mini society.
Yeah. So are you saying that this is an outgrowth? The family, marriage and the family is an outgrowth of human nature?
Yes, it is. In fact, if we even go back to the ancients, like Aristotle, I believe he correctly identified the bedrock of society not as the individual functions of the people,
yeah,
but rather as the families themselves.
So we're familial creatures, even more primordially than we are individual creatures.
Oh, yes, we are. As the saying goes, no man is an island.
So then, in reality, family values are more close to our being and our nature as individual values are.
We can't get away from it. Even if intellectually we outwardly deny it and we say we don't believe in it, we at the same time can't deny our nature, and we'll find ourselves trying to, if we're not going towards that good, we automatically fill it with lesser things.
Yes. Okay. So let me just get this straight then. We can understand through human reason that the two meanings or the two purposes or the double purpose of the human sexual act is love and life.
Yes.
Or what you might say, bonding and babies.
Yes, and they go together.
The unitive and the procreative. And this is in love and life, unity and procreativity, they're really one, they're not two.
That's correct.
They're distinguished in our minds, but they are two sides of the same coin.
Right. It's because we're complex creatures, and we sometimes need to break things down in order to understand it. But you're right. They are really are one and the same.
So the personal dimension of us relates to the love, bonding, unitive part of this. And you could say that the more natural bodily part of us, you could say, relates more to the procreative babies part of the equation.
Yes.
Okay. I think we need to let this inseparability thing sink in, because you are about to say that if you attempt to separate the unitive from the procreative, the babies from the bonding, the love from the life, it is intrinsically immoral, whether you're a Christian, unchristian, whether you're Catholic, non-Catholic, it doesn't matter who or what you are, this is a part of natural law.
Yes.
All right.
Completely agree.
All right. I want you to expound on that right after this break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. My guest, John Tudorus. Behind the glass is Miss Cindy. I'm Paul Morano. Be back in a moment. Back. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. That's 978-454-4980. Here at WCAP, Beneath the Surface until 11 p.m. My guest, John Tudorus. John, welcome back.
Good to be here.
I agree, 100%. We're talking about the contraceptive mentality and contraceptive legacy of our modern times, why even talk about it? I guess that's one of the things that we're talking about. Why talk about it? Why is this so important? All right, so before the break, we talked about some of the reasoned understandings of why contraception is unnatural, violates human nature. I just want to give a natural law, a really quick natural law argument, and then an argument from personalism, because we are also persons. A common natural law argument relates to what we somewhat of what we were talking about last segment, and that is that the individual needs food to survive, and the end of food is digestion and nutrition. That's the end and purpose of food, of eating, even though our personal motive might be a little different than that. My personal motive, John, might be that I'm hungry, or I really that chocolate cake really looks delicious, or I might have other motives for eating. But the natural purpose, not my personal motive, but the natural purpose is digestion and nutrition, the survival of the body, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I would add to that, and I would say the more closely a person aligns themselves to their actual nutrition needs versus their wants as far as food, the more that they align themselves to their actual needs as far as what they actually consume, the healthier they actually become.
And the healthier you are, the happier you are.
That's correct.
Yeah. So that's why Mother says, eat good foods, eat your vegetables, you know, have your fruits.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It makes sense. All right. So, and like we said last segment, there are two survival mechanisms within the human being as well as other animals, and that is food for the body and sex for the species. So the survival of the individual has pleasure attached to it. For the survival of the species, as Mother Nature would have it, would also have pleasure attached to it, because both are very, very important. They relate to survival, and life continuing is a good thing.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. All right, so then if you were to eat a delicious meal, You intentionally sit down and eat a delicious meal, but you don't want to gain any weight. So you intentionally throw it up. You intentionally vomit it out. Are you participating in a natural act?
No, because you are not getting the nutrition.
No, you're not getting the nutrition, but you've also started the act. The act is in progress. You've eaten the whole meal.
That's correct.
You've enjoyed the pleasure of that act. And now you're saying no to the potential consequences of weight gain.
That's correct.
Right? And so what you're doing is you're saying yes to the pleasure, no to the purpose, which includes, of course, nutrition. And by vomiting it out intentionally, you create, and of course, it's an act of bulimia, which most people still today believe is a disordered act. Right?
That's correct. And one way you can tell that it's a disordered act is the ultimate effect of it. Is that people not only get skinnier, but they also become much less healthy than what they were previously.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's not just that they're lacking nutrition. I mean, even, for example, that excessive vomiting, it can scar your esophagus, so
right.
Your digestive
right.
tract after a while is trained to not work properly
right.
because it gets so used to the habit of regurgitation. So all these things contribute to lack of good health.
Right, to the individual. Now, this is pretty clear to most people today. What doesn't seem to be pretty clear to most people today is how this is a perfect analogy to the sexual act. In as much as if you intentionally engage in the sexual act, and in the process of it, you purposely thwart its natural end, it's called contraception.
Yes.
This can be seen, reasonably, as a sexual bulimia.
Very much so.
In as much as you engage in the natural act and you purposely thwart the natural end of that act. So contraception, being sexual bulimia, is a disordered act, just like bulimia is, and the unhealth occurs with the not only the individuals involved, but the family and society as a whole.
Oh, exactly. I mean, in there, it's not, it's you know, some people have this mistaken idea that what they do in private is only their business and has no repercussions for the rest of the world. And to some degree, there is some truth to that, in so much as that, you know what you do on your own time to some degree is no business of mine. That being said, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have consequences. What we think, what we do, has consequences with how we behave and we act in the future towards other people. So, for example, the man who is addicted to pornography, his mind gets trained to see women not as individual persons who are worthy of dignity and respect, but rather as objects towards his end that he's pursuing, which isn't an actual real end in itself, but is really just a means. I mean, just towards...
So that whenever you violate your own nature, there are consequences whether you see them or not, whether you acknowledge them or not.
That's correct.
Okay, so then with the act of bulimia, there are, obviously it's a disordered act and there are consequences. With the act of sexual bulimia or contraception, you must say the same thing because the same thing applies. All right. That's a natural law argument against contraception, that it violates your own nature and it's wrong to do, hence. Now, there's also arguments from the personal dimension of the human being, or arguments from personalism. And one example would be that to give yourself in, and I'll just use the term the marital act, because this is what traditionally it was used as, to give yourself in the marital act partially by using contraception is not an act of love, because an act of love has to be a total self-gift. And when you're holding back an important part of yourself, which is your fertility in this case, then you are not giving yourself, it is not an act of love, but rather it's an act of mutual selfishness.
It is.
Want to expound on that idea?
I mean, it sounds very crude to say it, but I've actually heard the term mutual masturbation.
True.
In the sense that even if on the surface it doesn't look like that, which to some people can be somewhat repulsive, and understandably so, because it is not natural, but the idea that they're actually seeking, again, when I mentioned that about the man addicted to pornography, he's seeking only the pleasure. But in this case, it's more upfront and personal. Instead, you're saying to your spouse or whoever your partner is, I want you only for this pleasure that you give me, but I don't actually want you, the person. Mm. I don't want to give myself entire and full to you.
And I don't want to receive you entirely and fully.
That's correct.
That's what it's saying.
That's correct.
So there's a certain language of the body here, whereas as John Paul II really expounded upon this, that the love act itself is a language in itself. When you give yourself to the other in the act of sex, your bodies are actually objectively saying, I love you and give myself to you fully and completely, which means, of course, permanently. But the mind might be saying something else. And he says that the use of contraception is a very grave lie to the other person.
Very much so.
When it comes to body language.
Oh, sure. I mean, you're not giving yourself entirely in full, which is really the design of the marital act itself. It is designed so that the man gives us himself, you know, as the way he's designed to, and the woman is has perfect receptivity, and then her gift in turn, of course, she's not giving of herself materially in the way that the man is in the exact same way, but what she gives forth is life.
Yeah.
So she is the depositor of the seed of this life, and that's where the nurturing and this fruitfulness has its veritable Eden, if you will, Garden of Eden.
So then, love must be total, and it must be life-giving.
Yes.
And this is the double meaning that we talked about in the first segment, isn't it? That marriage, that sex, is love-giving and life-giving, not one or the other.
It's both. You can't have one without the other, and if you go in and you try and remove either one, it inevitably always removes the other as well.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. Here at Beneath the Surface, 978-454-4980. And we want to, after, so those are arguments from the use of human reason alone without any religious faith. I do want to, after, we have a phone call, but after this phone call, I do want to talk about a few of the examples relating to faith or religious arguments. Did you want something to say?
I did want to add something that history actually bears out, that what we are experiencing now is somewhat of a recent advent in human history. There have been pockets over time where off and on in certain empires you'd see material evidence that there were practices that were contraceptive in their nature.
Yeah.
But the widespread acceptance of artificial contraception that we see now and the mentality that goes with that is really not even 100 years old.
Absolutely unique. It's about 50 years old, if that. Absolutely unique and recent in human history. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Bob from Hudson, welcome to Beneath the Surface, and don't go ahead of us because you're going to steal things that we want to do in segment number 3. Bob, welcome.
Oh, I don't think I'm ahead of you. I just wanted to add to... your comments about some of the side effects of contraception and birth control.
Oh, please do.
There's something that I saw that was very interesting. It was on the independent newspaper for United Kingdom.
Yep.
It was an opinion piece, but it was striking because it said of all the bad things of contraception. Let me see if I can get the title for you.
It doesn't matter. Just go ahead.
Well, what it was is this woman was complaining that they had halted a male contraceptive birth control pill, or it might have been shots or something like that.
Right, it's been in the news.
And she was complaining that they stopped the trial because of certain side effects, and this is what she said. She said, these are the side effects that women have been enduring for years.
That's right.
And they stopped trials for men? Men are wimps. And my thought was, is that she's got it wrong. It's not that men are wimps, it's that women are being abused. They're tolerating something that they shouldn't not be accepting.
So they're being played for the fool, is what you're saying.
They're being played for the fool. I mean, there's been, you know, a long history of doctors trying to develop, a contraceptive device for men.
Yeah.
But the side effects are intolerable.
All right, let's quickly talk a little bit about that, and that is that we know that the birth control pill for women is a class 1 carcinogenic?
I think it's believed to lead to an increased incidence of breast cancer.
That's documented evidence. And it also it also imbalances the woman's ecosystem in many ways.
Yes.
Some of which make them think differently about who they're attracted to, and they end up marrying the quote unquote wrong person. And as a result, they're not as fertile as they could have been if they married somebody that they were attracted to when they were off these pills.
Yeah. When they're on the pill, they're attracted to differences, to similarities to their family, and when they're not on the pill, it acts as it should work naturally, where you're looking for genetic differences between yourself and your mate.
Now, some birth control pills, of course, were bad for the hearts. Heart attacks were not uncommon.
Strokes are very, very common these days. I'm surprised every once in a while you'll see commercials on TV talking about lawsuits about various birth control devices that wind up causing strokes for debilitating strokes for perfectly healthy women, people of a young age. I'm talking early 20s. There was a championship skier who lost her ability
right.
to ski because she had a stroke while she was on the birth control pill.
Bob from Hudson, my last comment, and we need to take a break, is that it really is amazing in a very sad way that the same people, and I'm going to make a generalization here, the same people that are so concerned about the environment and the ecosystem are usually the same ones that are very pro-birth control for women. They don't care
right.
about women's bodily ecosystem or a woman's true internal environment. They just, I mean, it is a matter of just filling her with hormones and chemicals so that pleasure can be had whenever men want to.
Right, right. And it's interesting that the Catholic Church offers an alternative, and I'll let you and John take care of that.
It's called natural family planning, and we will get onto that right after this break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. I'm Paul Morano. My guest is John Tudorus. We're here until 11. Lots more to say, though, so don't go away. And we are back. Listening to WCAP, Beneath the Surface. I'm your host. I was going to say I'm your guest, but I'm not. But in another way, I am. I am a guest of your radio, or your ears, at least, through podcast. But your real guest tonight is Mr. John Tudorus. John, welcome to the third and final segment.
I am glad to be back for the third segment.
And so am I. All right, so if you want to get involved, 978-454-4980. We talked before the break and before our good call from Mr. Bob from Hudson. We talked about the reasonable arguments that one can understand by use of human reason alone. Now, of course, there's a lot of faith things to say about this for those who are Christian and even Jewish, but we're going to have to go through them really quickly. First, the traditional Onanism.
Yes.
By which Onan used a method of birth control and God slew him, and this was the Old Testament.
Oh, yes, he slew people in the New Testament as well to set an example.
Yeah, but a lot of people, or some people would say that the reason why he lost his life was because he was not hospitable. But other theologians have debunked that because the penalty for the Levirate Law, or violating the Levirate Law, for those who understand what that means, when a brother dies, the surviving brother is expected to marry the brother's widow. This brother, Onan, did not want to do that, and he... because he did not want to sire an offspring from this woman, his brother's former wife or widow, he performed a birth control act, and God slew him for that. Not just for the inhospitality of not taking his brother's wife in a natural as a wife, but also for the unnatural act of onanism.
Well, when you're inhospitable, that could be like you're not being nice. And
yeah.
of course, nice really has to do with social conventions. And God isn't bound by mere social convention. God is perfect truth and goodness. And when he does things, he doesn't do so in the shallow way that we often see. There is a thoroughness, a complete and total thoroughness for the reasons why he does things.
And there was a much lesser penalty for not taking one's brother's wife. That's what I was getting at.
Yes.
In the Old Testament, it's spelled out. And you can look that up if you'd like. Also, the word pharmakia. It's used often in the New Testament. Many modern Bible scholars are coming to understand that pharmakia, which, of course, the word pharmacy comes from in English, meant certain potions that were condemned. As people who use them would lose their salvation in the New Testament. And they're coming to understand that pharmakia were those potions and contraptions that people used to for the means of both contraception and sometimes abortion.
Yes, actually, there was a few years ago, I had taken a class on medical bioethics, and while I'm not myself in the medical profession, I found it to be somewhat enlightening. And one of the things that actually came out in there was that even in ancient societies like ancient Rome, they actually had methods there for contraception and abortion, and actually many of them, particularly those of abortive nature, could often be life-threatening to a mother.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about bioethics in college. As you know, I'm an instructor of bioethics in the college level. So the term pharmakia has that double meaning of either stopping conception, those potions and contraptions that stop conception, and or stop the growing fetus that has already come into existence. And in the Bible, both of those things, contraception and abortion, are seen as two fruits of the same tree. Okay. And, of course, the constant teaching of the church, which is considered infallible when it's the constant moral teaching of the church, is that contraception is condemned. And every single Christian denomination from the very beginning up until the year
1930... The Lambeth Conference.
Excuse me, 1930, with the Lambeth Conference of the Anglican Communion in England, was the first one to open the door a tiny crack to married couples. Of course, not unmarried couples, but married couples, maybe once in a while for emergency situations using a contraceptive. But other than that, even they were condemning contraception 99% of the time. So that cracked door that occurred in 1930 with one Protestant denomination, between then and 1968, when Humanae Vitae from Pope Paul VI was promulgated, every single Protestant denomination sort of fell to that wave.
And actually, unofficially, many priests and even bishops within the church had fallen as well, too, to that type of thinking, so much so that before Humanae Vitae came out, which had condemned and basically reasserted or reaffirmed, rather, the church's constant teaching on this, is that they actually had a synod, almost like the recent Synod on the Family, except it was in relation to contraception. And all but two of the bishops actually said that the church should change its teaching, which gives you an idea of how much this type of mentality had infected those within the church.
Yeah.
Within positions of teaching authority, which is of course a grave problem.
Now, the Pope had to make a statement.
Yes.
And he did that finally in 1968 with Humanae Vitae, which, again, underscored the constant teaching of Christianity and the Catholic Church up until that point, that all forms of contraception violated human nature, violated natural law and the will of God, and were condemned. He, again, reiterated that fact.
Yes, he did. And what he also did, too, which was very interesting, is he actually predicted, and not in the sense of like a soothsayer with their magic ball saying,
right,
I predict your futures, this. He actually, using reason, reasoned out what the natural consequences would be of this, and he's proven to be correct.
Let's look at that. And that's why Pope Paul VI is called prophetic. In 1968, he wrote this encyclical. In section 17, he writes that should contraception become popular? And remember, this is back in the middle 60s, so it hadn't become popular yet. But should this new pill and contraception in general become popular, several things might happen, he said. Number one, conjugal, which means marital, infidelity, and a general lowering of morality could result. That's the first thing that he says. Now, has that not happened since the middle 60s?
Oh, immensely so. I mean, one easy way to look at it is statistics. I mean, the sheer number of divorced couples, or even now, those who prefer cohabitation, is at a greater rate now than marriage. So not even those who are divorced. I mean, those statistics have kind of plateaued. But even those who would even want to get to the point of marriage, which is this mutual gift of persons, instead of saying, we don't even want to get to that point.
Yeah, yeah, marriage really has taken a hit. And one reason it has taken a hit, and this has everything to do with contraception, of course, is the premarital sex culture that was born out of the popularity of contraception.
Oh, sure. And of course, it's led to a lot of erroneous ways of thinking, such as the try before you buy argument.
Right.
Which really, of course, that in itself denies what the whole nature of sex is within...
Right. And, of course, we've come since the 1970s to this relationship, and I put that in quotes, the relationship culture that we're in today. That sex, of course, is not even considered immoral as long as you're in a quote-unquote relationship. And this, of course, is in and of itself, even though people have completely lost sight of this, this in and of itself violates human nature.
Oh, sure. I mean, how do you even define that? What this quote unquote relationship is? I mean, and people say, well, it's whatever you want to be, whatever you want to feel it to be, right? And there is actually part of the, I would say, actually primary to the problem is this idea that it is the I that determines what love is, rather than an objective nature of what love really is.
So the I do's at marriage actually say yes to that objective nature.
Yes.
So you're saying yes to the permanent, fruitful, total self-gift before you actually give it in the sex act.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's how that is natural to the human person.
That's
you're
correct.
Saying.
And those who do the whole try before that you buy, what they don't really often, I'd say most of the time, if not all the time, realize is that they're actually setting themselves up for failure.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, I'm just going to go see if I'm sexually compatible with them or if I'm personally compatible with them, and not realizing that when they get in that type of serial monogamy, they go through a few partners before you know it, when they actually find the quote-unquote the one and say, I'm going to get married, they've conditioned themselves to actually hold back and not give of themselves to their spouse the way their nature actually demands themselves to do injustice.
Because human nature is, even though we don't have time to dispute the arguments against this, human nature is actually monogamous.
It is.
And so you can't give yourself away and then give yourself a whole self away and then give yourself your whole self away again, because you are no longer a whole self once you give yourself away.
That is absolutely correct.
There's something profound about that, and scientific studies that unfortunately we don't have time for again seem to be indicating this more and more so, that the church is teaching on premarital sex being against human nature and immoral has a lot of validity to it.
Oh, sure. And I would add onto the consequences, there's actually a couple other key ones.
Mm.
One of them is aside from that, the whole shack up, not get married culture, is is actually the idea of homosexual marriage itself. Once the procreativeness of the sex act is basically pulled away, at least in the minds of people, when they no longer associate marriage with procreativeness, then actually what people would define as marriage, at least in their own mind's eye, meaning a subjective definition, not an objective one.
Something that satisfies emotions.
That satisfies emotions is that marriage need not be about procreativeness.
And what's funny about that, you're right, that the contraceptive mentality has rationalized in people's minds homosexual unions. What's interesting about that is the two meanings that we talked about before, the procreative meaning is obviously non-existent with homosexual unions.
That's correct.
But what people don't understand as much as that, or it's not as clear as that, is that the unitive meaning is not at all possible either. You can't. The two cannot become one flesh.
It's not possible at all.
Two people of the same sex.
I mean, they might increase in affection for each other over time, in the same way that, you know, let's say men who are just have an honest to goodness friendship. That friendship might increase over time. So there's a certain natural affection that may grow, but the actual, real, authentic union that is part of the design of marriage is not possible No. In a homosexual reunion.
So the two cannot become one flesh, and obviously there can, and that it cannot result in,
yeah,
in more than one.
And actually, to call a homosexual union a union is actually not a real union at all.
Right, it's a non sequitur. 978-454-4980. We have about 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes left. Really quickly, the pornography culture that we have today is another result of this separation of union from procreation, of love from life.
That's correct. And I touched on it before. I mean, so, but really it treats people as objects. I mean, as objects to pleasure, really.
Right. And one thing that we need to say here, a lot of people are saying, even if all of this is true, are we supposed to have 12 kids? Not necessarily. The church has always said yes to the science of natural family planning. There's only a short window every month that a woman can get pregnant, and there are ways that natural family planning is 99.9% effective. All you have to do is...
Right. And the key with that, too, is to not treat it with the contraceptive mentality, to saying, I never want to get to have children, but really to say that, look, I'm working within the natural means of the way God designed things, and that I'm still open to life.
So look at Google natural family planning and the various ways that are out there today. Thank you for listening. We tried our hardest to get in as much as we could. You've been listening.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.